For many Australians, genetics feels new, and for some, it can even sound a little bit pseudoscience. And in a lot of ways, that makes sense because most of us were raised in the old healthcare model, and it's the only model that we've ever known. It's the one where you wait until something feels wrong, then you book a 15-minute appointment with your GP, you get a diagnosis, perhaps a referral to a specialist, and you cross your fingers and hope that the medication is going to be the answer. But we are in a different era now, and it is genuinely exciting. It is time to embrace the era of personalization and prevention, because today we have access to genetics, to smarter blood testing, scans, and tracking tools that can spot risk early, often years before a diagnosis ever arrives. And I think that changes everything. It means that we have a real chance to stay well for longer, to understand our unique risks and know our key numbers, notice those patterns that are changing early, and perhaps shift our trajectory while change is still possible. So today we have invited Dr. Sam Shea. His letters behind his name are worth listening to. It is a DCIFMCP. He's a US-based fit genes expert, although he's got lots of family here in Australia, so we're going to claim him as our own. He's going to help us make sense of it all. That's a big task, Sam, that I've set you today. If someone was hearing your name for the first time, what is it about genetics that you love so much, and what drew you to this area of medicine and science?
Sure. I got into functional genetics and fit genes the way most people who enter the natural health space, the functional medicine space, the holistic medicine space, whatever you want to call it, through my own personal journey. I was very sick as a child, and I dealt with a lot of fatigue, severe insomnia, really bad, embarrassing digestive issues, anxiety, depression. I had two addictions, one to sugar, one to video games, and a lot of physical pain as well. And I also had Lyme disease and, just kind of a whole smattering of things that made me very unwell. And I was supposed to be the third generation medical doctor in my family. And yet, as a teenager, I decided to pivot to natural medicine because for what I was dealing with, Western medicine was not the right toolkit for my particular situation. So I went very deep into a whole wide variety of fields in the natural healthcare space. I became a doctor of chiropractic. I went into functional neurology for 8-9 years. I got an acupuncture degree when I lived in New Zealand. I studied under an osteopath for a period of time while in New Zealand. I also studied with the Institute for Functional Medicine and the Kalish Institute for Functional Medicine, and then found Fit Genes back in 2016. So we're going past our 10th year here of when I was introduced to genetics. And you know, at the time when I did it in 2016, I was having chronic joint pain across my fingers in both hands. And I was having having other issues as well that I wasn't able to solve. And when I ran my genetics tests, I found out that I was a hyperinflamer, meaning that I was genetically more prone than way more than the average population to be inflamed badly. And trivial things would trigger more inflammation that would be stronger and last longer and be harder to get rid of. And when I saw my genetics, I saw a pathway forward with some novel approaches that weren't ever conceived of to me before, despite other types of testing that's out there, whether it's gut testing, mitochondria testing, hormone testing. Those are all great tests. I love those. But genetics is unique because it offers a very different lens that would not have been revealed otherwise. So because I found out I was genetically more prone to inflammation than other people, I had to switch some strategies that were offered by the genetics test, like the information was there. And within a couple of months, all my joint pain went away and hasn't come back. Additionally, I found out that I was genetically sensitive to what's called, quote, caffeine-induced anxiety and depression. I'll say that again, caffeine-induced anxiety and depression. Now, a lot of people take caffeine in coffee or tea, or some people live off of it. Some people call it a food group. Caffeine is so prevalent, but there's a percentage of the population, of which I am one, where we have trouble metabolizing it, causing caffeine-induced anxiety and depression. Now, some people say, well, why didn't you realize that before? I mean, if you were drinking caffeine all these years, why? Well, because I was kidding myself that I would drink coffee and yeah, I would have energy, but it was this anxious, like jittery, like, and then I would have this rebound down into a depressive state. I think, well, I just need more coffee to bring myself back up. And it was this kind of caffeine roller coaster. And I was kidding myself because I was conflating anxiety for energy. The other thing that I learned about myself is I was genetically sensitive to histamines. Now, histamines are a very specific molecule that's adjacent to the inflammatory response to things. And like a histamine response, like if a bee stings your arm, like the bee didn't inject a half liter of water into your arm when it swelled up. And what happened is that the bee venom was injected in. Your body has an emergency flood switch called histamine to flood the venom with water quickly, so the concentrated venom doesn't burn a hole through your muscle, your flesh, your nerves, your arteries. That's the whole point of that giant water swelling, is to dilute the venom, whether it's from a bee, a centipede, a spider bite, a snake bite. I don't know. In Australia, you got probably the stones are venomous for all I know out there. What was that famous David Spade like? The most venomous turtle in all Australia. Like everything is venomous in Australia. I'll get you. So like the histamine is your body's flood switch to dilute toxic venom. And the problem is that if people are sensitive to histamine, they will take on a lot of this water from histamine foods. So this is one reason people have mystery puffy weight. Is like exercise won't solve it, but I'm still have this puffy weight. Well, what it may be is you're genetically sensitive to histamines, where if you eat a high histamine food, like, and I'm saying this at a great personal risk, avocados and chocolate. I know. There's probably some, you know, therapy lines being dialed right this minute as soon as I said that. So when like histamine, like avocados and chocolate, and also things like processed cheeses, processed meats, old foods that are left in the fridge for too long, fermented foods, there's a whole list of high histamine foods. But if you eat a histamine food and you're genetically sensitive to it, there's both together.
Yeah, so let's break this down. Obviously, fit genes tests for lifestyle genes. These are things that can change through lifestyle factors, through switching your diet just a little bit, through different types of exercise that is specific to your genetics. So when we hear of these sort of, and I'm not going to call them fad diets because there's a lot of great science coming out now with lots of cool things, but it may not suit you. So coffee might be absolutely fine for one person and even someone in your family, in your same genetic pool, but not right for you.
Totally. Yeah. And people like avocados is a great example. People are genetically sensitive to histamine. If you eat avocado, it's the equivalent of swallowing a slow-moving full-body bee sting, in the sense that you're going to create this kind of inflammatory response, causing fatigue, indigestion, headaches, and potentially for some people even hives. So diet is unique to individuals. There are truisms like avoid junk food, avoid alcohol, avoid processed foods. Don't, you know, eat foods that are as local and as fresh and in season as possible. And we also have to deal with the reality of like when people live in areas where there may be food deserts, or there's availability is not always around. So it's just, if you understand at least what your genetic ideal is for your diet, you can adapt as best you can to be as healthy as possible given the environmental circumstances you find yourself in.
Imagine this, unlocking your genetic blueprint with insights from over 200 healthy aging genes, pinpointing your unique SNPs and potential red flags, understanding what your body needs to thrive and where it may need some extra support. No more guesswork, no more random supplements, one-off blood tests, or one-size-fits-all advice. For the first time in history, we have access to the power of genetic testing, something no generation before us has had. This information could change everything. Join our free DNA webinar and you'll get our Stay Well scorecard jam-packed with the markers that we want you to track every year, starting now. Friends, know your genes, own your health. Let's learn to thrive together. Visit theagingproject.com to register and I'll see you there.
I often say it's not me, it's my hormones, which kind of gives me a little disclaimer as to the mood I'm in or what's happening. And I love the fact that the fit genes that they test are almost the same. You go, it's a relief, isn't it? And for you, it must have been, although it was years and years of pain and suffering, really, once you found out what it was, is it like, oh, thank goodness, it's at least it's something and something I can make changes to do something.
Actually, what actually happened when I got my report, I remember this very clearly. I got my report. I was in Christchurch, New Zealand at the time at an acupuncture seminar. And I was at the place I was staying. I opened up and looked at my report. When I saw my genes, I cried for an hour. I cried because for two reasons. Number one, I finally had scientific validation as to why I was so ill. I grew up, I was so chronically ill, and everyone else around me was not as ill as I was. And I was so frustrated and I was gaslit my whole life. My whole life I was gaslit that I was attention seeking and all this stuff. And I'm like, no, I'm miserable and in pain and I'm suffering and I don't understand why. And when I got it, I was like, oh, now I understand. My genes aren't bad. They're mismatched for the environment. I'm a hyperinflamer genetically. People will say, well, how is that a mismatch? Isn't all inflammation bad? No. As a hunter-gatherer, if I was born into an era where like 20,000 plus years ago, where I had me and a hunting party had to go chase down an animal 20 times my body weight and all we had were tiny sticks, someone's going to get bitten, mauled, gored, trampled, or otherwise. And if I'm a hyper-inflamer, what is inflammation for? It's to rush in and repair damaged tissue with red blood cells and to rush in white blood cells to kill any infections that were introduced by, I don't know, an animal bite. So if I'm an exuberant inflamer, I will heal more quickly from a bite wound than my less inflammatory prone hunting party member. But it's always trade-offs. It's always trade-offs. Nature's all about trade-offs in order to ensure the lineage survives. It doesn't matter if I survive, it's about my lineage. So that's why there's always these kind of genetic trade-offs. The lesser inflammatory prone hunting party member, that person may not survive as well in the short term from an acute bite, but they will survive better long term because of less chronic inflammatory prone conditions. So there's always a mixture in the population of hyperinflamers and not hyperinflamers, because that's the way to guarantee statistically survivability over the lineage. Now, that may sound a bit scientific for people, but it's if you, that concept of like, I don't have bad genes, I'm just in the wrong environment. And the second reason I cried was not that I just had a explanation, but I also now had solutions. I had solutions based on my genetics to help me, which they did.
If you knew, obviously, that you have an anti-inflammatory condition, then you just stay away from those types of foods and you're not going to feel so bad.
Yeah. So if you know your genes and you know what you know, it's, you know, Aussies love their sports. So like, you know what the boundaries are of the playing field. Like there's a playing field. Some people's boundaries are a lot smaller and you got to stay within those bounds. Otherwise there's going to be a penalty. And the penalty to me, one of the penalties, I should say, was the chronic debilitating joint pain in my fingers because I was operating outside my boundaries according to my genes. Now, everyone's got a different size playing field. And so I don't know about you, but I want to know what the boundaries of my playing field are. And if you don't run your genetics, you don't know unless you can guess really well or you kind of figure it out after trial and error. But I'd rather like save myself a lot of pain, a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of money by everything, all the wasted diets and fads and unnecessary supplements and other things that I'm doing when I should just invest a little bit into my genes. And the best thing part about the genes, you just do the test once and you're done. Like that, your genes are with you forever. So if people ask me, like, I'm just getting into, you know, functional testing, what's the one test I should do? Like genetics, not even a close second, because it's the most high value test, period, because you only need to do it once. I love the other testing, thyroid, gut testing, mitochondria, liver, hormone, the toxins, they're great, fantastic. But you have to repeat those because the value of that test is only as good for like what, 3, 6, 9, maybe 12 months, depending on the test. You don't make decisions on a thyroid test from 5 years ago, but you can with a genetics test.
And so, if you don't know what your genetics are, some of those testings aren't going to show you the way forward, are they? They're going to show you problem, but it may not be the perfect way forward for you.
Yeah, they're going to show you what they're going to show you. But in my opinion, genetics is the foundation, and all the other pieces are supportive of that foundational work. What genetics does not show you, let's talk about what genetics doesn't show you. It doesn't tell you like what your liver is doing right now. It will tell you what the probabilities are of how well your liver responds to X, Y, and Z, and what the risks are of how you need to care for your liver, or rather if you don't care for it going forward. So the genetics will tell you how you can live optimally for your genetics and where the weak points in your genetic chains are. What it won't tell you is what is your state of health now. It won't tell you what amino acids are in your blood now. It won't tell you how much TSH you have in your blood now. It won't tell you what your immune system is doing now. It won't tell you how much vitamin D is in your blood now. What it will tell you, when we talk about vitamin D, it will tell you if you're genetically less likely to synthesize vitamin D from the sun, and will also tell you genetically if you really struggle to getting from vitamin D from the blood into your cells where it does its work. But getting vitamin D into your blood, whether it's from sunlight, supplements, or food, is half the battle. Getting it from blood into your cells is two completely separate genes. For the nerds out there, they're called VDR genes, vitamin D receptors. But vitamin D is so important. It's not just about bone density. It does that, great. But what it does do is the majority of what it does is it's anti-inflammatory and regulates your immune system. But standing in the sun is only half of the journey. And if you don't know that you have these what are called variants or non-ideal versions or red and yellow dots of these vitamin D receptor genes, you will struggle to get the vitamin D that you work so hard to get into your body actually into your cells to do the wonders it does with inflammation in your immune system. And there's different lifestyle recommendations. It's not just take more vitamin D. That's not what helps get your genes to express more vitamin D receptors, more docking sites for the vitamin D to land on. There's other things that I had no clue about. None. By the way, I have red dots in VDR1 and VDR2. Like, so this was very personal to me. And it was one of the reasons why I was able to deflame was because I thought, I have two of the most important genes of inflammation are bright red dots, meaning I got a bad copy of that gene from both mom and dad. That's the quote red dot. One bad copy plus one good copy, doesn't matter from what parent, is not a red dot. It's a yellow dot. So one good, one bad is a yellow dot. Two good copies is a green dot. It's a traffic light system. So if you know your genetics, then there are some things that you really can't find out in any other way that are meaningful and impactful for the whole rest of your life. That's why I'm so enthusiastic about genetics that I became the lead trainer for Fit Genes, whether it's in the US or in Australia or New Zealand. Like, I'm the one that's training people and designing new reports and so on, because this is such powerful, powerful technology that's now available to people very, very easily. It's a simple cheek swab. I mean, post-COVID, people are very familiar with cheek swabs in the nose, on the other nose, just for variety in the ear. No, kidding. But now it's just cheek swab inside, just rub it against the inside of your cheeks, put it in the little tubey-doo and send it off and it's analyzed. Like, it's so easy.
Over at You Must Try It, we've discovered so many fabulous low-tox skin and makeup options. Many of our guests have spoken about reducing our overall toxic load, so that has become a huge priority for me. I've slowly moved to low-tox products, and You Must Try It have made it really easy. We only stock low-tox products we've tried, tested, and love at YouMustTryIt.com. So we have done the research for you. If you haven't visited us already, please stop by at YouMustTryIt.com for 10% off your first order.
If you could give every child a cheek swab and send them home with their genetic blueprint for lifestyle genes, and again, all we're talking about here is 100 or so lifestyle genes that you can actually do something about with the way you live day to day. So if you could do that for every child, and then they knew moving forward what foods were going to be inflammatory, what was going to work for them from an exercise perspective, how they could best look after their bodies. Would you do that?
Yeah, that to me is one of the most cost-effective things I think any family can do is run their genetics. I literally can't think of a more cost-effective thing for the long-term well-being and health and vitality and resilience of a family than doing that. So,
is it mainstream in the U.S.? Are we a bit behind everyone?
It's huge in the U.S. It's massive, and to the point where we've got like apps of apps and people like podcasts devoted to it and all sorts. It's massive here, and. We talk about exercise. I mean, one of the great things about Fit Genes is that the exercise genes were added within the past couple years. And now people, because again, you know, Aussies like their sport. I always get confused. Do I say sport or sports? What's the proper, how do I speak Aussie? Okay. Sports. Sport. Okay. Got it. Okay. So, When you look at your exercise genes, there's a couple really critical things that people should. I mean, this is alone is worth it. There's a gene that's described in Fit Genes that determines what your fiber type is. Meaning, are you fast twitch, intermediate twitch, or slow twitch? Which in layman terms is, are you more a sprinter, an endurance, or a mixture? Now that's has massive consequences for people. So if you are doing if you're really into a sport, but you are doing a sport that does not match your fiber type, at a minimum, you will not be able to perform at the highest level because you just simply don't have the muscle fibers to do it. An endurance athlete, an endurance muscle type will not work in a sprint activity, will not perform at the highest levels in a sprint activity. And the reverse is true. So that's number one. If you want to know where you're going to be the most effective in terms of performance, get your genes tested to see what fiber type. Olympic prospects go through this. Like if I were an Olympic coach, and this happens, and you're picking between two people and they got the same times and you want to pick one to go to train for the Olympics, you check the fiber type. Because if you're doing a sprint sport and they've got an endurance fiber type, and the other one's got the sprint fiber type, you're taking the sprint fiber type because that endurance fiber type is going to plateau. So the other thing that can happen in your exercise genes is that you learn, are you vulnerable to injury? And that's really important to know. Like, do you have, there's two major collagen genes that determine how elastic and you know, healthy your collagen can be, or if it gets more injured more easily. And then there's also genes related to inflammation that if people become over-inflamed from too much exercise, leading to more and more injuries. You see this in the CrossFit industry a lot. So if you know genetically that your collagen genes are not ideal, that means that you can knowingly preempt that by giving yourself much healthier diet, like collagen, inositol, creatinine, vitamin C, whatever it might be that supports the integrity of your collagen. And if you're at risk of inflammation-based injury because you're an over-inflamer, like me, I have this, then I'm going to now knowingly, consciously design my exercise and training to maximize recovery, not maximize exercise. Doesn't mean I'm not going to exercise. I am. But I'm going to be very, very, very mindful and specific and conscious about my recovery strategies. Because then if I don't, I'm just going to get injured. And everyone else is running around seemingly fine. And I'm like the one that's always injured, always injured. But if I don't know my genes, then I don't know that this is hardwired. And yes, it may seem unfair, but nature was never fair. I'm interested in reality. What is the size of my boundaries of my playing field? And if I step outside of it, there's going to be a penalty, an injury penalty. And people can complain about it, how it's genetically unfair. It doesn't matter. Nature doesn't care. I want to know what my boundaries are and stay within them so I can be as healthy and long-lived, as productive and as effective and as a clearer mind and body as possible.
The way that FitGenes has gone about this is great because you get the 6 reports. It's broken down, as you said, into a traffic light system. So green dots for good, orange dots for be careful, and red dots for, whoa, hold up, you need to make some serious changes right now if your body is showing signs. Again, if you've lived perfectly within, as you say, your boundaries, these red dots may never have caused you a problem.
Yeah, so a couple of things I would clarify there. Red dots are definitely bad. And yes, if you do live in a way where those red dots are never provoked, like you just live in for example, if you've got really strong pro-inflammatory genes like I do, and you live just naturally an anti-inflammatory life just by mere accident, then those red dots aren't really going to be a problem. It's an old trope, but it works. It's like genes loads the gun, but environment pulls the trigger. It's not the best analogy out there, but it works. And so if there's no environment to pull the trigger, then whatever, it's not an issue. Like if someone is at risk of celiac disease because they got the genes for that gluten can create celiac, which is a very terrible autoimmune disease in the intestines. And by the way, we test for that in FitGenes. But if you're never exposed to gluten, then it's irrelevant. Like it's utterly irrelevant because it's never going to be exposed. But there's gluten everywhere, so people do need to get that gene tested, which is why it's in the report. The other thing that I would clarify is that yellow dots are not middle of the road, casual, oh, just be aware. No, yellow dots are way closer to red dots than they are to green dots. They're not middle. You treat yellows like slightly less worse versions of reds. So when you see a report with lots of yellow dots, you take that seriously. It's not a shrug. It's not like, oh, it's a yellow light. I might as well just speed up through it because it'll be fine. No, yellows are not fine. And that is a misconception that people have around looking at genetics. It's unfortunately just a cultural hangover from just the traffic light. And it's like, what is your relationship to the yellow traffic light? It depends on how you drive dictates your relationship. Yeah, exactly. So the other thing that I would say is that the FitGenes has, these 6 major sub-reports. I will say also that I have personally designed a summary of the most important genes across those reports to make it, it's called the FitGenes Genetic Blueprint, and it is now available to people, in Australia. And it's designed to simplify and make it so much easier to understand and implement FitGenes. This report.
It is. Yeah. You can look at these reports and it's really interesting. And anyone who's sort of been following the Aging Project for a while knows that you can dive down that rabbit hole when you're ready and you've mm-hmm. got the information. When you open up those reports at first and you see the dots, the blueprint that you've created really just spells it out. Hey, Shelley, you need to take sulforaphane. Hey, Shelley, you need to up your vitamin D. It's very clear and it's really simple to understand. So I do thank you for that personally, because otherwise you feel like you need obviously to sit down with one of our clinical nutritionists and go through it. Or you can read this and you can give it a go. And the way that you spell it out, this is what you need to do straight up. And when you've got that sorted, and that might take you a couple of months, right, to actually put these things into practice and turn your life around and change a few of your lifestyle habits. But once you've nailed those and they become habit or ritual or just a part of life, then you can dive down into the next level and go, okay, I've got that first bit sorted and I'm feeling good. What do I need to do next? And I think that's why the blueprint has become, you know, such a valuable part. I flick back to it often just to check in and make sure that I've got things right.
Yeah, the blueprint is what it was designed to do was to put all the highest priority lifestyle changes up front at the top. That's the real value of it. It's the consolidation of all these other amazing reports, but actually putting them in an order of priority. Like there's like page 6 of the report is the one page summary of start here. Here are the genetic realities around your diet. Do this, and this. Here are the top 5 supplements based on your unique genetics. This, and this. Here is your exercise reality, your fiber type, your relationship to collagen, your relationship to inflammation-induced injury. Here's what it is. And then the rest of the report, there's single slides around each of those specific recommendations. That's like the summary to explain what's going on. If you want more of the detail, it's all there. But you've got the summary slide to be just very clear. These are my boundaries. This is what I need to do in order to maximize my genetic potential. And that report has taken me years and years and years to design. And now it's available. And it just simplifies things for, you know, the clients, for the patients. It simplifies things for the coaches and the practitioners to make it just really easy to understand. And most importantly, to make it easy to implement. And I would strongly encourage people to work with a health coach along with when you get your genetics report. Yes, it's the report is very, very user-friendly. That's why I designed it. And I FitGenes works with people who worked with coaches and licensed practitioners because we know that you will succeed if you have not just a plan, but you'll succeed even more if you have a coach. And this is why, like, it's the FitGenes is not just something you can just go grab. You get it through a coach or a practitioner, because we really, really want to make sure everyone has the best possible chances of success here.
Where did you start? I mean, is there a starting place? You get these reports, one's based on food, one's based on well-being, obviously exercise. Where do you suggest that your clients?
Sure. So if you're going to get your FitGenes done, you're like, okay, I've got these options. Well, just the three biggest categories are diet, supplements, and exercise. Where would people start? I would start with whatever is the fastest and easiest to implement, because all of the recommendations there are tuned to your specific genetics. And what you want to do is develop quick wins that build momentum and confidence. That's where I would start. Now, if the easiest thing for you to do is to simply think, I'm going to switch over the supplements I was just getting because I thought they were a good idea because I read a blog post on it somewhere, to, oh no, these are the top 5 that I need based on my genetics, then start there. If it's easiest for you to look at your list of dietary recommendations and you happen to be, like me, a person who is genetically sensitive to caffeine, and you're like, well, I guess I should stop taking caffeine because I'm sick of being anxious and depressed. And if that's a variable I can very easily control, I will find other methods to navigate whatever my attachments are to coffee, whether it's I switch to dandelion something to get 70% of the flavor, or it's if I need energy, I'll figure out other ways to get energy without caffeine, then do the caffeine thing. The good news is that your genes are there for life, and that just start somewhere. And I suggest starting with the easiest thing to implement for you.
I think that's also, I mean, again, we give out a lot of information here, but then it's up to everybody to find out what works best for them. We had the fabulous Dr. Stacey Sims on, and she talks about her protein coffee. And again, it is like the ultimate go-to if you're not going to sit down for a steak at 5 o'clock in the morning before you go to the gym. But again, that could be triggers for someone if they're putting the wrong milk in, if they're having, you know, whey protein over pea protein, if they shouldn't be drinking coffee. Suddenly what seems like the ultimate solution could become a really big problem for you.
Yeah, and this is where genes, There's a level of growing up when you see your genetics reports. It's like, oh, I now can't live in denial and click my heels three times and think happy thoughts and think that this food that I clearly has always been bad for me, and I've just been denial about, is going to work somehow. I've helped several people quit alcohol simply because their unique genes was like, alcohol is a really bad idea. And that was just kind of the last thing they needed to see. It's like, okay, now it's undeniable. And they stopped. And that's not going to be true for everybody, but it certainly can help when people just need a reality check. Like it happened with me in coffee, you know, like I had a reality check and I stopped coffee. End of story. It doesn't mean I don't miss it, but I have found ways like other, you know, herbal drinks that can approximate. You got like the, you know, for people who are desperate around their fear around not having coffee, like there's dandelion, like chicory blend. There's all sorts of coffee alternatives these days. We're recording this in 2026, not 2006. There's so many coffee alternatives.
Do you see, I mean, you've seen thousands and thousands and thousands of reports. Is there anything common that keeps popping up for, say, even for women? Is there one that you go, oh, most women are inflammatory, or most women?
It's not women, I'll say about more like disease states. So people who are chronically ill, I identified a pattern, 6 years ago, 5, 6, 7 years ago, where I identified a pattern where 100% of my chronically ill clients, except for one, had either two reds or two yellows, or one red, one yellow, in those VDR genes, the VDR, vitamin D receptor genes. The one person, a double green, that was chronically ill, she had horrific stress of a nature I won't discuss that would drive anyone into chronic disease. The exception proves the rule. So I saw a 99% plus correlation. I contacted the chief science officer who has access to the master database and the other practitioners who see a lot of these genetics tests. And I said, I see a pattern of double variants in VDR1, VDR2 variations in chronic illness. Please check the database, check with the other practitioners who see a lot of tests, and get back to me and see if they see the pattern. He contacted me, I figured it was like a month or two or three later, but he contacted me back. He said, there's absolutely a pattern. Absolutely a pattern. So then what does that mean? Is that if your vitamin D is one of the most important nutrients in the entire human body, every cell in the body, except for red blood cells and dead skin cells, has vitamin D receptors on it. But the vitamin D controls between 3 to 5% of your entire DNA. That's 1/20th to 1/33rd of your entire DNA is controlled by vitamin D. Its bulk job is controlling your immune system and inflammation. And if you can't access that key thing to help you control your inflammation and control your immune system, guess what's going to happen? Chronic illness is way more likely. So, or the right stuff, or enough vitamin in your supplements or food. Still, there's other things that need to be done for the vitamin D receptors, not just more vitamin D. So that genetically you wouldn't know that unless you ran your genetics. So the other thing that I noticed, aside from that link, is that the obesity issue, that I identified three main patterns of stubborn weight gain in the Fit Genes genetics report. There's three broad categories. People have either inflammatory water weight, which is the most common cause of stubborn weight according to my assessment and observations. This is the type of weight that's got that like, it's like puffy weight. It's blubber. It's water weight. It's puffy weight. It's like ruddy. It doesn't change with exercise. You can't run it off. And these are the people that put on and off, you know, 1 to 3 kgs in a day. That's just, it's just on and off, on and off, on and off. That's water weight, inflammatory water weight. The second category is toxic hormonal weight, because your fat cells are the dirty closets of the body. And if you have problems detoxing and detoxing your hormones, then your body will shove things into the fat cells like a dirty closet. And then the body will make it difficult to detox, to get rid of those fat cells, because if you open up, like imagine you open up a massive dirty closet that hasn't been sorted, just piled up, it's just going to spill everywhere and cause a massive mess. Like your body can't your body has a rate in which it can accept toxins. This happened to a colleague of mine in graduate school. He was a pilot for over 20 years before he went to graduate school. And he got really, really sick one day, like a massive flu, and he lost a ton of weight quickly. He lost all of his long-term and almost all of his short-term memory, because all the toxins from all the fuels and all the flying in airplanes is very toxic. All of that got released all at once, because he got so sick and he lost so much weight from being sick. All those toxins got released all at once. And those fat soluble toxins went the only other place where there was fat left, his brain. So your body is very hesitant about letting toxic fat go unless you're ready and you have all the nutrients to get rid of it. Then the other form of fat that you see genetically is caloric fat weight. That's the calorie weight that people think weight is. But again, I've seen over and over and over again, the vast majority of weight people are struggling with these days is inflammatory water weight. And in the Fit Genes report, there's multiple clusters that point to the inflammatory water weight that you can do something about. So for example, the VDR genes, those are massively important for controlling inflammation. And if you've got variations on those, there's very specific things you can do for that. If you are an over-inflamer with the other 15 massively pro-inflammatory genes, like of those 15, I have 13 of those that are pro-inflammatory, that are red and yellow dots. You know, there's a whole set of recommendations to deflame from there. And it's not exercise more and eat less. That's not what that's none of those recommendations are there for those particular genes that are hyper-inflammatory. People who are sensitive to histamine, you can't run off histamine. That's not a thing. If you're sensitive to histamine, then you got to know what foods are high in histamine or that provoke histamine creation in your body or shut down the enzyme that breaks down histamine in your body. And if, because otherwise you're just eating that equivalent, that slow moving full body bee sting and putting on all this water weight. Then there's people who've got, they've got stronger reactions to food allergens that you can see in the genetics. So people have a lot of these genes that make them more reactive to food allergens, then they got to go on an elimination diet, because the elimination diet, you're going to remove the most common allergens in Western society. And so you're not prone to making your intestinal system just an inflammation factory. So like those are just some examples of the inflammatory water weight genes that you'd find in the Fitch genes report. And you'd find the genes related to detox and hormones, and you find the genes related to, you know, overeating calories. Like there's genes in there about some people genetically just don't feel full. They don't feel satiated from normal amounts of food. That's genetically mediated. People, you know, fullness is in the brain, not the stomach, and the signal from the stomach to the brain is mediated by genes. So some people overeat genetically because they just don't feel as full as they should. Some people genetically crave sugar more than others, and so they have a tendency to eat more. Now, some people listening to this was like, well, I thought you said all those genes you can do something about. Well, if you tell me I'm at genetic risk of overeating, genetic risk of overeating sugar, how is that empowering? Here's how. Control your environment, not your willpower. Control your environment, not your willpower. I have those genes for lack of satiation and for sugar craving. I have those. You know what I don't do? I don't keep sugar in the house. I don't keep bread in the house. I am not stronger than bread, but I'm smarter than bread. I just don't buy it. That's me controlling my heart. Yeah.
It's never too late. I mean, if you got this test done over 40 and you think, oh, I've had all of this going on for all these years, you can still make changes at any age.
I got my genes done at 35. I did it at 35 is when I got it. Totally, you can do it at any age.
And you can still make changes at any age.
Absolutely.
And you think if you got your whole family done, then there are going to be, obviously, genetic similarities between you and other members in the house. So it's going to help everybody in the end.
Yeah, it's if you do your genetics as a family, then, you know, everyone's literally on, everyone's on the same page with just this mutual understanding, like, okay, we have, we've got what is common and what can be accommodated? Like if we've got all this one thing in common where we can't eat this thing or whatever this might be, then that makes everything really straightforward for the family. If there's a mixture, like some half the family can do this, half the family can do that, then at least everyone knows. And now there can be some adaptation and just everyone's can support each other. I can help you with this thing. You can help me with that thing. And now everyone's going to be not only healthier, but the family's going to be way happier together, because if you're eating things or are engaging in a lifestyle that's causing you to be inflamed or more toxic or whatever, well, guess what's also going to be affected? Your brain, your mood. Like, this, quite literally, you'll have a happier family if people get their genetics run and people start acting on it and supporting each other as a family.
See, that's it. We talked about it being about sort of personalization, but it really is about empowerment, isn't it? And it's right there. It's a simple cheek swab. It's simple data that is easy to digest, excuse the pun, and there are real lifestyle changes that you can make today that are going to make you feel better starting straight away.
Totally. That 100%. This is why I have gotten so involved with Fit Genes to the point where I'm their lead trainer and I design reports, is because this is the single most high value, cost effective, easy to understand, longest lasting, most important foundation for someone's health, well-being, and longevity and optimized weight that I have ever found.
Well, that is a pretty good wrap. Thank you so much, Sam. We're going to check back in with you time and time again. We might break down each report separately as time goes on, but this was a wonderful introduction to those that are thinking about whether their genes really matter and whether, if you knew what they were, could you do things about it? I think you've absolutely proven today that the minute you know what's going on in your own body, you can follow your own roadmap and you can make changes that are going to make you feel a difference pretty much immediately.
Thank you, Shelley. It was a real honor to be here and I'm very happy to help.
As always, the Aging Project podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes. Always seek medical advice from a qualified practitioner.